It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 316. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please remember to visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me suggestions for future show topics or any recommendation. Also, if you have a question, fire away. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. I have a nice stack of email to get to tonight with great questions and feedback from all of you, so I'm going to cover that. You can get links to all of the archives of all my shows, and that's at mtswiki.com. That's the Mike Tech Show Wiki, and you can follow me on Twitter so you can learn when the new content's posted up or when I'm doing a live show. I always tweet it. My Twitter account is Mike Tech Show, so that's twitter.com/Mike Tech Show. I have jam-packed show that I want to get to, a couple administrative things I want to cover for the contest. I didn't forget. You can go to podcastmadness.com, listen to the shows of the week, those podcasts that will be putting out a code. Then you go back, register that code, and you have a chance to win. So that's the name of the game, and you can enter often. So that's at podcastmadness.com. That's still going on. That's the summer of podcast 2. I still have my contest going, and I know I haven't mentioned it the last week or so. I'm trying to get everybody to catch up. I'm looking for recommendations for a contest that would be interesting that I can get all the listeners involved. So I'm asking for suggestions. If you have a, just put the suggestion down, whatever it is, send it to me, and you'll be entered in the contest. And that's at miketechshow@gmail.com. And I'm giving away some Windows 7 Home Premiums, the retail box. Look for me next week to pick the winners. Also, continue to send me your ideas on how to get more customers or increase your sales for computer repair, computer consulting. Even if you're not into computers and you have tried and true techniques and things that you use in your business to help increase sales, send it to me. Email me, because next week's show is going to be dedicated to that topic. I think it's going to be a tremendous show that will definitely be linked for a long time with many, many, many downloads. So I'm looking forward to building that show out and recording that next week. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And if you are, I don't care if it's computers or not, you will probably benefit from some of the techniques and some of the things that are going to be discussed in that show. I know you're going to be able to apply it to anything that you're doing, because let's face it, whatever business you're in, there's some type of sales involved. If it's nonprofit, if it's, you always are looking to increase followers, increase listeners, increase something. And so what we're going to do is we're going to highlight those techniques and review those tips with you next week. So that's going to be great. Keep sending them. I already have some real good ones. Let's take care of business. You've heard me talk about GoToMeeting for some time now. As a matter of fact, for 5 years. But do you know why I think it's the best online meeting service? It's because you can join meetings in seconds. There's no complicated setups. Everybody can just go to GoToMeeting.com and with one click, join the meeting. You can share keyboard and mouse control. You can switch to presenters very, very easily. You can even record your meetings. It supports voice over IP. It is clearly the best online meeting service that you can have. It's for one flat rate, you can hold unlimited meetings every month. You can test it out, kick the tires, and try it out free for 30 days. But you got to visit gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. That's gotomeeting.com/techpodcast for your free 30-day trial. All right, the first email for tonight, and this is from Andy, and it's feedback for show 313. Hey, Mike, great show as always. I'm slowly catching up on the podcast. With a couple of hours on the road to clients this week, I was able to get in some podcast listening. A couple of comments. For TechNet and the home tech wanting to learn the Microsoft stuff, the cheaper product is probably fine. In a lab environment, it is unlikely you need the incident response from Microsoft, and you are unlikely to need the clustering advantages that the enterprise version of Windows Server would give you. However, in a business environment, then, I would strongly recommend the pro version of TechNet, especially as it's likely to be reimbursable as a business expense. And if you are doing support for customers, the incident response is well worth it. And we covered a lot of that when I was talking about TechNet as the pros and cons to the different versions. And in the pre-show, I know there's been a few listeners in the chat room that have taken advantage of TechNet and being able to have access to all that great software. Remember that if you have a production server down and it critically affects your server, then the support call will be free of charge anyway if it meets a few requirements, like everyone is affected, nobody can work. Actually, that's not true. And I've been in that situation. They're going to want your credit card and they're going to want money. They don't care, Microsoft. Keep that in mind. It's not free, no matter how critical it is. However, Microsoft, they do take your details and call you back. From what I remember, in a four-hour response, but normally a lot quicker than that. The only caveat, you have to be available 24/7 until the problem is resolved. That's true, no matter what. You can't go home at the end of the day or night. You have to keep working until the problem is fixed. But we'd be doing that anyway in a critical response or a critical server down. Having said that, you are talking to gurus and the problems are usually resolved very quickly, especially if the server has internet access and you can remote in. Also, problems with security patches is also free. I've not used the patch support, but have had to invoke the server down support twice. Well worth it. All right, he continues. In regards to moving a physical to virtual machine with Shadow Protect, remember that physical servers often come with OEM licenses, which means that legally and sometimes physically, you are unable to move to a different platform. You can buy software assurance within 60 days, I think, or another Windows license to move it to virtual server, but you may find that the moved virtual server will not allow you to log into the server due to the product activation. Even though you may have a new key, say a volume license key, this may not be accepted and you'll get prompted to call Microsoft, but they won't be able to help either due to the OS being OEM. Well, if you have a volume license key, you will have no problem applying that going from physical to virtual. I know I've been in that situation. So he continues, in my two experiences where I have had this issue both times, I was unable to log into the new server. One server that I used Shadow Protect to move to a virtual image would state I had to start the product activation wizard and then log me off before the wizard started. The other server, using VMware, would prompt me to activate but not accept the activation code that Microsoft could give me. In the Shadow Protect image, I eventually abandoned the VM instance and restored back to the original physical server on the new hard disks. For the VMware issue, I had to insert the volume CD and run a Windows repair on the original server, a very scary prospect, as I was doing this on a live production exchange server. Oh, my. I wouldn't have mind doing it on the image, as I could always take another image if something went wrong. But to do it on a live exchange server was very nerve-wracking. I completely agree. However, I'm pleased to say that the repair worked and all of my data was intact. I was then able to image and migrate the virtual VMware image with no problems. Now, I have a question back to Andy. If you had VMware, why not use their P2V? Why use Shadow Protect to do that? When I know in the production environment, when I was moving all the physical servers to virtual, using VMware's P2V, they worked flawless, and I didn't have any issues with the licensing. Maybe that's because it was all OEM, it was all volume license keys. I'm not sure. I'm wondering why not just use the P2V built into VMware. Shadow Protect has worked really well for recovering servers, but I've found for some reason that it doesn't always restore the drives with the same drive letters. I've had drive D and C swapped when the server is rebooted after a restore, which messed up Active Directory, which was expecting to find data on the D drive. I know the answer to this, but was actually on the new E drive. A boot into directory restore mode swapped the drive letters around, and a reboot later, and everything was back to normal. Just a gotcha to beware of. There could have been a hidden partition that you did not back up within Shadow Protect when you were doing your restore. There are some incredible advanced options when you're restoring that you may need to call Shadow Protect for support. You can edit the boot any file before you reboot, and that's probably what had to happen. That's why your drive letters got messed up, where you might have needed to add that boot any and go into some of those advanced options for the restore. It's very, very powerful, and I've ran into that situation, and there are ways around it so you don't have to swap the drive letters. Finally, I was going to send you this as a voicemail after finishing the show, but you didn't leave your contact number or even your email address at the end of the show for listeners to get hold of you. That's because I mention it in the beginning of the show, usually a couple times, but since you've mentioned that, I will add that to the end of the show. He continues, "You mentioned the website, but that doesn't help when driving in the car and wanting to leave a message after listening to the podcast while everything is still fresh in my memory. Also, could you please include prices when you mention products that you've just purchased?" I think I do. Maybe I forgot, I guess, on some. "Even ballpark figures help to increase the amount of attention paid when listening to a podcast. Knowing the product is within a user's price range means they are more likely to listen even more carefully. If users knew that the serial to USB cables were only $6, they are much more likely to go to your website and then click through with your referral links to purchase one, as the price is cheap enough that it's not going to hurt if they never use it, but it might come in handy one day. Whereas if the misconception of the price is likely to be $30, they may not bother to make the impulse purchase. I know the prices can change, but the range is likely to stay the same. Thanks again for the great podcast." Andy, lots of great recommendations and comments. I really appreciate it. I try to mention the price up front, especially big purchases like the HP ProCurve switch that I purchased, or when I talked about that lamp that's $30 from Amazon. I usually mention the prices. Sometimes where I don't mention the price is if the software or the product comes up in the chat and I haven't had a chance to research it and I'm mentioning it, or I don't visit the website from that chat reference. That happens often where I'm unable to list a price, but some great suggestions there. Speaking of HP ProCurve switches, TechHelp Twitter to direct message to me asking he wants to replace his current switch. And what HP switch do I like? 48 port. And Tech Help, I have the 24 port HP ProCurve that's very quiet. And I know I talked about that a while ago. I will put that model and link in the show notes. And the price is like around $350. I haven't used the 48 port version of that managed gig switch, but I will look that up and get the, there, I know there's a 48 port version, and I will list that in the show notes, but I know that's going to be significantly more money than that, the 24 port version. This is from Michael. Mike, thanks for the time you put into providing the Mike Tech Show. I wanted to provide one clarification. A couple shows ago, you mentioned that TeamViewer could not perform unattended remote access. This is not correct. I've tried different flavors of VNC and Log Me In, and I have found TeamViewer to be the fastest, at least from my limited use. TeamViewer is free, and I can access all my computers on my friends and family from any computer or with my iPod Touch. It works very fast on the iPod, by the way. I thought that it was standalone and someone has to give, the, at least the way I've used TeamViewer, and it could be there's a lot more options that I'm not taking advantage of, and that's why I was wrong, that TeamViewer was standalone and someone has to give you the number and the password. You enter it and then the connection's made. It's great for on-the-fly remote access to connect where the person you want to connect to, it's just a couple clicks and they can download it. I did not realize that you could have TeamViewer permanently installed that you could connect anytime. So I stand corrected on that. Log Me In is a rather long process to remote control a computer. Oh, boy. Now, this is where, Michael, I don't agree with you. With TeamViewer, it's only two steps. All you do is double-click the icon, right-click on the computer name, and select remote control. That's it. You're in. It's just as easy on the iPhone or iPod Touch. Very quick. Again, thanks for the show. And Michael's from Prescott, Arizona. Michael, when I use Log Me In, I get a list of all the computers. I click, and I remote control when I'm in. I don't know how easier you need it to be. Now, there might be one less click with TeamViewer, but I think it's very, very fast. And I use Log Me In every single day. Your takeaway from this is that you have incredible free options that you can use for remote support. You have TeamViewer and Log Me In. They are very, very good. There are going to be features in each that, hey, you may like, I may not like. That's why we have multiple products. That's why we have different types of mice and keyboards. Everybody has different things that they like and different features. But what's great, I think, for us is that we have a tremendous wealth of options in front of us to support our clients, friends, families. That is really, really the bottom line here. So either one of these products will serve you well. This is from Alan, who's looking for a reliable free replacement for Dreamweaver 3. Hi, Mike. I have been using Dreamweaver 3 to edit my web pages for several years. I would like to replace this software for something else, and preferably a free piece of graphical software. I have searched for a replacement, but I'm leery about downloading just any software for fear of spyware and malware. Are you aware of any good free web page builders? And is there a website out there that a person can go to get reliable comments on websites offering software? Thanks, and I listen to your show regularly. Alan, before the show tonight, I brought this up in the chat, and I have a couple great recommendations here. There is a link that I have for a web design on a budget, and there are six free alternatives to Dreamweaver. One of them, the first one I have heard of, and it's Composer with a K. And there's also AM, AYA, Bluefish Editor, Scream, Quinata Plus. There are excellent recommendations here, but the reason why I want to focus on Composer is I was reminded there is also a Composer Portable from one of my favorite websites, portableapps.com. Composer used to be called NuView, NVU Portable, which is what I was familiar with in the portable apps, and I didn't realize that it has now become Composer. I think you should look into Composer because you got the Big Brother standalone and you also have the portable. And I know the portable version is free and you can definitely test it out. I think they are some great recommendations. Alan, after you go through them, and do not worry, the portable apps I have used all the time and there's no spyware or malware associated with them. When you're downloading something, what I think you can do is make sure that your Super Any spyware and your malware bytes is updated. And when you have a download, right-click and run those anti-spyware programs against your download. And that will give you the peace of mind that when you run it, that something bad is not going to happen. Another way is do that in a sandbox. If you're playing with a lot of software that you're downloading, absolutely create like an XP sandbox and run it in VMware Server, which is free, or VirtualBox. You can install that on your system and have XP and install XP and or any operating system, then download it in that virtual operating system and open it up, and then you can actually see whether something bad's going to happen. In the chat, they're recommending Microsoft Security Essentials. That's another great app. It's not one that I use, but I know it comes very highly recommended. Look into that. Look into MSE, the Microsoft Security Essentials, and that's free for you to download and install. And that will help you with the spyware and malware and antiviruses. All right, this is from Scott, who is in the chat, and he says, different kinds of internet. Hi, Mike, this is Scott, longtime listener of the show. I previously had Verizon DSL for internet. I would get a whopping 1 meg down and 384K up. It was the most cost-effective solution in the area, and most days it worked just fine. Speed tests would always give me very close numbers to the speed I was paying for, no matter what server I tested, and speed was always consistent. Now, I moved to a new area and have the Comcast Cable 16 meg package. I must say, cable is completely different. Speed is not consistent. 1 minute, I may get as much as 20 meg down, but the next, I may only get 5 or 6. When I run speed test at speedtest.net, some servers give me better speeds than others, whereas on DSL, the numbers would always be closely the same. Let me comment here. Comcast cable is a shared internet connection. So when you have that pipe, and that connection to Comcast from your house or apartment or wherever you're at, you are at the mercy of everybody around you that also has Comcast. So that's why certain times of the day, kids are home from school, people are home from work, your bandwidth is going to drop considerably because of the demands happening locally. If you got everybody around you in your neighborhood all downloading and hitting the internet all at the same time, your performance will suffer. Where DSL, that connection is, it's not quite dedicated, but it's more dedicated to your house. When it goes back all the way to the central office, you have less of a shared experience, so to speak. So you will see closer to the results of the service that you've purchased. So if you have a DSL connection at 1 meg, you're probably going to get 1 meg all the time, regardless of what everybody's doing around you. The same with Fios, because that's fiber directly to the house, and that's what I have. But Comcast is shared, and it's because of that sharing that performance will go down when everybody's using it. Let's continue with Scott. The main problem I am having now is with my wireless. When plugged in via Ethernet into my router, I get a full 54 meg throughput with download speeds of 16 to 20 meg. However, once I go wireless, even just a few feet away from my router, my speed instantly goes down to a max of about 7 meg download. And my data rate goes down to 32 or even 24 megabits per second. The area I move to has several other networks around. I've done all the standard tweaks, such as changing the channel number to avoid interference, adjusting the wireless transmit power via DDWRT, etc. But I still can't get the same speeds as I can wired. And we're going to talk about this. I started looking into getting a higher gain antenna for my router, but then I realized that it's not a matter of distance of getting the signal, because I get the same results even if I'm just a few feet away from the router. So, any ideas as to what is happening and why my wireless speeds are slower than my wired speeds? When I had DSL, the difference was only a few kilobytes, but on cable, it's several megabytes. Any information on this topic would be greatly appreciated. Thanks, as always. Keep up the great work with the show, Scott. All right. First off, what speed are you getting with your wireless? You need to measure what your connection you're getting to your wireless router. Are you going A, B, or G? I'm going to assume you're going G right now, which you are only going to be at 54 meg when you're connecting at best, and you will never achieve the full 54 meg. It just can't happen. You're going to be significantly less when you're connecting. So right off the bat, you know you can't connect with the speeds that you would get over a wired cable. There's also many things that can interfere with your wireless connection. Do you have wireless phones? Other networks that are in your area, they all contribute to decreasing microwaves. Everything around you, walls, everything. Now, I know you're very close to the router, but there's lots of things that can be in the way. Sometimes you can have problems with the connections. Even though it's G and G standard, you're going to find that you have a D-Link router, but you have the Intel chipset, and it just may not give you that perfect connection. What you're looking at is, why are your speed tests so drastically different between wireless and with your wired? The difference is going to be you don't get that uplink and that connection. There is a utility, and I can't remember it off the top of my head, that you can run, and you need to run it on a wired machine, and then you need to go to the machine that is wireless, and you can run the other part of the utility, and it can measure exactly how you're connecting. There's NetStumbler. There's a few utilities out there that you can run that I would like you to try to see what it's doing for measuring your connection. Lou in the chat just mentioned his cordless headphones was killing his wireless. Very interesting. Scott mentioned that he's changed the channels and he's tried different things. There's a product that Winston just linked called Insider, Insider. I've talked about that in past shows. We also have the link to NetStumbler. So we have lots of links for Scott to try to see what his connection is. But wireless is always going to reduce your connection. You can never match wireless to wired. It can't happen. You don't have that dedicated connection that you can with a nice physical cable that connect. Now, Winston's disagreeing, but I disagree with Winston. Right off the bat, Scott, you got a couple things that you can try to test to see how you're connecting. And then I'd like to know exactly the speed that you're connecting from your wireless notebook or desktop, whichever computer it is, and the router. I want to know the speed that you're connecting at for that. And then we're going to be able to calculate why you're getting that reduction. I don't think you're going to be able to improve your situation. You're going to have to eliminate all of the possibilities of everything that can interfere with that wireless connection. And when you eliminate all of that, it is still going to be less than what you would get at your wired. But what will happen is you'll just get a better performance. So it'll be a little better. It's never going to match the wired, but it's going to be a little better. Scott, I know I didn't really get an answer to your question. So here's what I'm going to ask everybody. What can we recommend for Scott to do that can increase his connection to his wireless router? Now, remember, it's right beside it. So boosting and increasing the antenna, the bigger antenna, I don't think that's going to help. Maybe it will, and you can tell me why. Give me some ideas that I can pass on to Scott, and then we'll have him try that, and then I will also cover them in a future show. So let's see if we can help him out. This is from Jeff, and this is about Outlook appointments. Mike, I am stumped. So I ask you or the listeners for a solution. I use Outlook 2007 and was living in the Pacific time zone. I then moved to the Central time zone. My appointments, birthdays, and anything else that had the day start at 12 a.m. did not seamlessly convert to the new time zone. I had every dated item now staging over 2 days. This is not acceptable by any logic. So I manually changed everything to 2 a.m. from 2 a.m. to 11 p.m. just to get everything to show only 1 day. There has got to be a solution to this. Please help. I have some feedback, Jeff, on your Outlook issue. You have to export everything to a CSV, change the time zone in Excel, and then import it back into Outlook. That is the one recommendation for your Outlook issue. He has another follow-up here, another email. I have been converting every family computer that came with Vista to Windows 7. Ah, good job. I always change every computer control panel to the classic list where everything is easy to read and in alphabetical order going top to bottom. That's exactly what I do. Windows 7 control panel is now forcing me to read from left to right. I have sought how to change this and have no solution. This, in my opinion, is not a natural way for anyone to read a list, and cannot believe any Microsoft engineer reads this way either. Is there a known solution to change this to a way to read that does not hurt my eyes while trying to find the data that I need to control? When I go into control panel for Windows 7, I pick the large icons, and the large icons go from left to right alphabetically. I don't know of an easier way to make that change. The only choice is you have for control panel is view by category, large icons or small icons. If you pick the large or small icons, you get everything. If you get categories, you only get the hierarchy of the summary of the items within control panel. I hate that view. I always pick the large icons, which looks closer to that traditional control panel look. I don't know of any other options. Maybe we're going to need a tweak or an add-in to control panel or Windows 7 that might be able to do what you want, Jeff. If you have any suggestions for Jeff, please send them to me and I will pass them on and share them. That is it for the show. There's no music tonight. I want to thank everybody for continuing to use my Amazon affiliate icon. I really appreciate it. You are going to purchase anything or know anybody that's going to make a purchase from Amazon. Take a moment, go to miketechshow.com, click on the link on the left-hand side and make your Amazon purchase. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much. That's it. Next week, big show. So come back, same time, same channel, where I will be giving you tips and tricks on how to increase sales for your business. I think that's going to be a great, great show that you're going to want to share with others and that you're going to want to listen to. So you can leave me a voicemail message. That's 240-949-2450. And you can always email me at miketechshow@gmail.com. Thank you and have a good night. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.